This is Weekend Ag Matters, produced by the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network and News Talk 1540 KXEL. Here are your hosts, Anna Hastert and Dustin Hoffman.
Thanks for joining us here on Weekend Ag Matters. I'm your host, Anna Hastert, joined here today by
Dustin Hoffman.
Dustin, glad to have you on the show as usual.
Well, where else would I be? We've gone through this. I mean, where else do I have to go on a Saturday and a Sunday?
Yeah, that's a good question. Anyways, let's take a quick look at our headlines from the week. Economists from the University of Illinois and Ohio State University say serious planting delays will result in reduced yields this year. Gary Schnittke of Illinois and Carr Zuloff of Ohio point out that history suggests the odds have increased for lower corn yields in 2019 compared to 2018, and soybean yields will likely not be exceptional. Very little planting has occurred over much of the Corn Belt, as 23% of corn was reported planted in the top 18 corn-producing states, compared to a 46% average for the last 5 years at this time in the spring. Late planting does not necessarily mean that 2019 yields will be low. In 2009, much late planting of corn occurred, and national yields were still 10 bushels above the trend line. However, the two economists write that yields have been exceptionally higher across the Midwest recently. With delayed planting, yields are expected to be more towards average. Higher yields kept net incomes high enough for farmers to get by last year, but that may be gone in 2019.
The Ag Economy Barometer plummeted in April, declining to a reading of 115, which is an 18-point decline compared to March, when the index stood at 133. The 18-point decline in the index was the fourth largest one-month fall in the barometer since data collection began in October 2015. Organizers say the barometer's decline was driven by worsening perceptions of both current economic conditions and weaker expectations for the future. Producers surveyed were less inclined to think now is a good time to invest in buildings and equipment, and are less optimistic that the trade dispute with China will be resolved by July 1st than they were a month earlier. Over half, 56%, of farmers in the April survey reported they expected their farm's financial performance to be about the same as last year. However, 27% of farmers said they expect the financial performance to be worse than last year. Finally, producers appear to have more negative perspectives on the future direction of corn and soybean futures, helping to explain some of the decline in the barometer.
On a little bit more of an uplifting note, Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue will travel to Japan and South Korea next week to participate in the G20 Agriculture Ministers meeting. The travel itinerary also includes meeting with his counterparts on global agriculture issues. The secretary will deliver a keynote address at the G20 Innovation in Agriculture Seminar this Saturday and speak at the Cotton Council International's annual Cotton Day on May 14th. As part of his meetings, Perdue will join his counterparts from Argentina, Brazil, Canada, and Mexico to discuss global agriculture issues. The secretary has planned on meeting with U.S. Ambassador to Japan and Japan's State Minister of Health, Labor, and Welfare. Those meetings are included along with a meeting with Korea's agriculture minister.
South Africa's agriculture ministry this week confirmed two more outbreaks of African swine fever. In a news release, the South Africa Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries says the two outbreaks follow an outbreak reported in April. Samples collected by ag officials confirmed the same virus is responsible for all three outbreaks, and all three occurred relatively close to each other in central South Africa. The affected areas have been placed under quarantine, and disease control measures are underway in the region where the outbreaks were found. Officials there are urging farmers to ensure they are buying pigs from reputable sources, among taking other biosecurity measures. The spread of African swine fever prompted heightened biosecurity measures from North American countries, including the cancellation of June's World Pork Expo here in Des Moines. That typically draws global participants from around the world, from countries now that currently have African swine fever outbreaks. Meanwhile, Tyson Foods executive Noel White told stakeholders during an earnings call this week that the threat is real, that African swine fever could still enter the United States, further justifying strict U.S. measures to prevent the spread.
And back to a little bit more of a depressing note, but worth noting here this week, farm credit conditions continue to deteriorate across the Midwest, according to the Kansas City Federal Reserve Bank. The bank's agricultural credit survey published Thursday reveals the trend of steady deterioration in agricultural credit conditions continued in the first quarter of 2019. Reductions in farm income were sharpest in Nebraska and Missouri. While some areas were heavily affected by spring flooding and blizzards, it may be months before the full impact to farm income is determined, given immediate damage and implications for the 2019 operating cycle are still being evaluated. The report says that as farm income remained low, demand for farm loans remained high, and the ability of farm borrowers to repay loans weakened at a slightly faster pace than in previous quarters. In addition, carryover debt increased again for many borrowers, and bankers continued to restructure debt and deny a modest amount of new loan requests due to cash flow shortages.
Finally, employees within the Department of Agriculture's Economic Research Service voted to unionize Thursday afternoon. The vote was 138-4 and is part of the employees' efforts to slow down or stop a plan to move the agency out of Washington. The Economic Research Service employees will be represented by the American Federation of Government Employees, according to reports. USDA, under the direction of the Trump administration, has proposed to move the Economic Research Service, along with the National Institute for Food and Agriculture, out of the D.C. area. Critics say the move will trigger the loss of valuable staff members and isolate the agencies from the Washington, D.C. community and its resources. Earlier this week, USDA announced the final three potential sites for the two agencies, being the Kansas City metro area, Indiana's Purdue University, and Research Triangle Park of North Carolina. USDA says the moves will cut costs, improve employee quality of life, and bring the agencies closer to stakeholders. Employees of the National Institute of Food and Agriculture are scheduled to vote on unionizing next month. That puts a wrap on the top stories for the week. We'll be back on Weekend Ag Matters right after this.
How many acres are you keeping an eye on? Another pair of eyes could be very helpful in protecting your ROI, especially ones that are highly trained. And that's what you'll get with an FS Crop Specialist. They can spot issues you might not even know you have using the latest technology, including thermal, drone, and NDVI imaging. Then they can get an early treatment plan started. Contact your local FS Crop Specialist to learn more about our crop scouting services. It's one more way FS is bringing you what's next.
In the month of May, farmers are working tirelessly at getting this year's crops off to a strong start. If it's a good year, we can already see the end of planting in sight. If it's anything less than a perfect year, we still have a ways to go. Sometimes it seems Mother Nature isn't giving us all the time we need. However, when we are in too much of a hurry, people can get hurt. It is in that spirit that we at the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network want to remind you to play it safe on the farm. Do not be in too much of a hurry. You and your family are the number one commodity. We wish you a successful start to your 2019 growing season, and remind you to be safe.
Farm Credit Services of America is pleased to report record cashback dividends of more than $230 million. For many of our customer owners, the share of earnings that benefits their operations and helps support their local communities is needed this year more than ever. We're proud to have shared more than $1.7 billion since 2004. Discover the power of ownership at fcsamerica.com. Agriculture works here.
You're listening to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Here again is Anna Hastert.
Thanks for tuning in to Weekend Ag Matters here on KXEL. I'm Anna Hastert reporting. Joining me here today is Shannon Moeller, who is project coordinator for the Iowa Seed Corn Cover Crop Initiative. Shannon, before we get too deep in the weeds here, can you provide us more information on the Iowa Seed Corn Cover Crop Initiative?
Sure thing. Thank you for that introduction, Anna. The Iowa Seed Corn Cover Crops Initiative is a water quality project funded through the Iowa Department of Ag. And the focus of this project is just working with seed corn production across the state, and we work to provide financial, technical, and informational assistance to help increase the adoption of cover crops within the seed corn cropping system. There's a lot of unique opportunities within seed corn production, such as earlier harvest, and there's several additional trips throughout the field throughout the summer. So cover crops can really help remediate some of the tougher things that those fields go through. The cover crops can help reduce erosion and build soil organic matter and so on and so forth in environment that's just a little bit harsher than commercial production.
Now, the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network is partnering with the Iowa Seed Association, who oversees the Iowa Seed Corn Cover Crop Initiative. And our mission is to present season-long insight into crop conditions, specifically grain-seeded after cover crops. The project, which is called Row Crop Run, officially kicks off this coming week and will go through harvest. Now, let's talk about some of the growers we'll be meeting with on this tour.
There's 8 seed corn companies across the state that are partnered with us. And so I kind of recruited at least one representative grower from each company. So I had provided you with a list of 10 seed corn growers across Iowa. And I'll kind of give you a little bit of an overview of where each one farms and some of the more unique things that I happen to know about that they are doing on their operation. So I tried to pick from farmers that I knew had a little bit of something going on that's maybe a little bit different than traditional farmers, and so I thought that it might make for some interesting conversations. So our first grower that I'll feature is Chris Bowman. Chris and his father farm in Clinton County, Iowa. They grow seed corn and commercial corn and soybeans. They are using cover crops both before corn and soybeans. So that's something that's interesting and has quite a learning curve that goes with it. Chris is also involved with the Soil Health Partnership as well. So there's some work. I'm not sure on the specs there, but he does have some trials with the Soil Health Partnership. So the next farmer on my list is Adam Nekinecki. Adam and his dad, Mark, farm in Pima County, just a few miles from both Benton and Blackhawk counties up there in that corner. Adam does some custom work for the local seed corn growing area that he's in. He's also doing some trials with Practical Farmers of Iowa with some 60-inch corn spacing and interseeding cover crops. The next grower I'll feature is Steve Anderson. Steve farms just outside of Grundy County in Marshall County. Steve farms with his sons and has a few hired folks as well. Pretty good-sized operation. Steve also does some of the custom work for the growing area that he's near. And this year, he will have a cover crop seeder on his, I think he said it was a Hagee, and so he will have the option to potentially seed cover crops when they destroy the male rows in late July. Then I've got a couple of growers that farm, not together, but they're kind of neighboring in Fayette County. I thought they were both really good speakers, so I couldn't just pick one. One grower we'll feature is Tim Recker. He plants cover crops with his planter in 15-inch rows, so he's using precision equipment there and gets by with a little bit lower rate than what traditionally the NRCS and other organizations have recommended, but he always has a very nice stand of cover crops and is drilling his soybeans between the rows of cereal rye. My other Fayette County grower is also Tim. Tim Burrock also farms in that same area in Fayette County. He has expanded his cover crop use. He's using cover crops on other acres following commercial corn harvest as well. One of our goals for the project would be that if growers are successful with cover crops following their seed corn harvest, that they would move into their commercial acres, of course, and have more cover crops in the following years. Tim is really living that out. Next on the list, we've got Chuck Cornelius. His family is Cornelius Seeds. They're over in Jackson County in far eastern northeast Iowa. Chuck's family has cattle, and they integrate cover crops with their seed corn production, and then they utilize those cover crops for livestock feed. That's an interesting perspective and, of course, a system that can make sense dollars and cents-wise. The next grower, Sam Oze in Hamilton County, he's another grower that is using cover crops beyond just seed corn production acres. And this summer, he has a project planned with Practical Farmers of Iowa and their local seed corn company, where they will be seeding cover crops at a couple different stages in their seed corn fields this summer. And one goal that they're hoping to achieve by some of these earlier seedings in seed corn would be to have some good weed control in that system. And the next grower we'll feature is Mark Kenny in Story County. So Mark is our Iowa Deputy Secretary of Agriculture, Julie Kenny's husband. They farm in Story County. Next on my list is Bob Herring in Cedar County, Iowa, southeast of Cedar Rapids. Bob grows seed corn and commercial corn and soybeans near the Tipton area. He has a pretty good-sized operation. I think he does use cover crops on beyond just the seed corn acres, or at least is moving that direction. Sees some benefits with weed control and really is a pretty good proponent of cover crops in that area. The last grower is actually a land manager for Hertz Farm Management. Jim Rebhune does manage several seed corn fields in the far southeast Iowa, Henry and Des Moines County. He does encourage conservation across all their farms, a very, very good speaker, a good representative for farm managers. So I think it'll be interesting to hear that perspective coming from a, you know, not necessarily a landowner operator farmer standpoint, but the land manager standpoint, why he would encourage or see the benefits of cover crops and other conservation practices as well. I think each grower or farmer that you will be interviewing has a different experience to share. And of course, they all kind of come back to having some similarities, of course. It'll be really neat to listen to these interviews throughout the summer.
That was Shannon Moeller, project coordinator for the Iowa Seed Corn Cover Crop Initiative, talking about the Row Crop Run, which the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network is doing in partnership with the Iowa Seed Association. Once again, this partnership is to present season-long insight into crop conditions, specifically grain seeded after cover crops. Interviews of growers involved in this project will be featured in our Profit Matters program, which you can always find online at iowaagnet.com. I'm Anna Hostard, and we'll have more after the break.
You're listening to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Here again is Dustin Hoffman.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. I'm Dustin Hoffman. Boy, it's been a crazy week on the topic of trade, and I'm not even talking about everything else going on, just on the fact of China. It's been a roller coaster. We just can't seem to cross that finish line with them. And, of course, the talks did dominate much of the headlines this week. Let's kind of go back and recap where everything was here as it all started out. We know last week a delegation from the United States was in Beijing, and they were hoping to be very close to wrapping up a trade agreement. We knew that a delegation was coming over here this week, being led by Vice Premier Liu Hui. And we knew that they were coming, and we were hoping that this means everything was very close. And then on Sunday, everything began to take a different turn. On Sunday, President Trump tweeted he was willing to increase tariffs on Chinese goods from 10% to 25%. Also, he said he was going to look at imposing tariffs on another $325 million worth of Chinese goods. This basically means practically everything coming from China would have a tariff on it now as it came to the United States. Now, reactions on social media, especially on Twitter, were knee-jerk and quick. There was a scramble to discover whether these tweets were political grandstanding. Was he establishing a tough guy approach? Or were there other reasons behind these tweets? Starting Sunday evening, the markets began to react. Corn took a double-digit hit. Soybeans dropped 25 cents, or just about 25 cents. The futures trading on the Dow Monday morning saw losses of 400 and more points. There was a lot of fear and speculation, and those are two things that will eat a market alive. Monday also saw reactions from the Chinese. China's Vice Premier Liu Hui had planned to lead a trade delegation to Washington this week. The hopes had solidly been that a trade deal was close at hand. Suddenly, after the president's tweets, the Chinese were looking at canceling their trip. State newspapers were commending the vice premier for taking a hard stance to President Trump's message. By the end of the day on Monday, though, it seemed the Chinese were still willing to send the delegation. And Chinese news stated that this should be seen as a gesture of goodwill on the part of the Chinese. Now, you have to take that with a grain of salt because the Chinese state runs the media. But just remember, this kind of propaganda stuff, that happens on their side of the ocean as well. Remember, there's a whole country over there that's being told what they're doing is right and what we're doing is wrong. And we're being told what we're doing is right and what they're doing is wrong. As you see, politics is politics no matter where you go. By Tuesday, the flood of negative reactions started to temper a little bit, at least in the markets. We saw gains in both corn and soybeans on Tuesday and even into Wednesday. And reports were confirmed the Chinese still plan to come. However, we were starting to find out that the whole thing started this week because the Chinese supposedly were starting to renege on parts of the trade deal that had already been agreed to. Things like forced technology transfer. There was questions about whether or not their hacking was going to cease. We thought some of the stuff was already ironed out. All of a sudden, they were changing it, and the language that had been agreed to all of a sudden was unraveling. And of course, when something like this is going on, Congress wants to know what's happening. Trade Ambassador Robert Lighthizer was more than happy to fill them in. He stated his trade team was not willing to accept China's latest moves, and they were going to stick to their guns and stick to the agreement that they already had. Lighthizer said, "We can compete with anyone, but we need enforceable rules." The ambassador restated the president was willing to fight for the American economy. We hear now from Ambassador Lighthizer.
"We can compete with anyone in the world, but we must have rules, enforced rules, that make sure market outcomes, not state capitalism and technology theft, determine winners. President Trump has for years recognized this very serious and I would say existential problem, and he is determined to take action to defend our workers, farmers, and ranchers, and our economic system."
Ambassador Lighthizer seemed to have a more tempered sense of optimism for getting the deal done. However, it's still optimism, and there's still a long way to go, but I guess I'll take optimism any way we can. We hear again from Ambassador Lighthizer.
"If we can complete this effort, and again I say if, and can reach a satisfactory solution to the all-important outstanding issue of enforceability, as well as some other concerns, we might be able to have an agreement that helps us turn the corner in our economic relationship with China."
Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley addressed the situation with China as well earlier in the week. Grassley told Ag Media, "Enough's enough," regarding the Chinese trade practices. He says, "We need to get these talks to a successful conclusion, something that can be enforced. And we have to make this worth the sacrifices the American economy has made to get to this point.
You got to get this negotiations right. And we have to applaud Trump being the first president to call out China on bad behavior and bring them to the negotiating tables so that we have freer trade. And when all the dust settles over these negotiations or these tariffs, we have to show that this was a worthwhile negotiations, not repeat 2011. Thought we were making progress. Chinese didn't carry it out. So that's why enforcement negotiations that are going on now are very important. And I have some sympathy for Trump's lack of patience with the Chinese. Enough is enough. It's time to strike a strong, enforceable deal so that whether you're farmers or businesses or consumers, you can get some certainty. Trade's important in the lives of so many Americans. I urge the Chinese negotiators to bring these talks to a halt, but a successful close so that we can avoid prolonged tariffs, which we know have an impact on the U.S. economy."
Then late on Wednesday, we had another escalation. It was reported that a tariff increase was put into the Federal Register. This meant at 12:01 a.m. Friday morning, May 10th, there would be an increase in tariffs from 10% to 25%. This put a crunch on negotiations. China said, of course, they were going to retaliate in kind. They also reiterated in Chinese state news that their presence in Washington was a sign they were the ones seeking a fair deal, and the U.S. was a side trying to go too far. It's really devolving into a war of words and politics while the negotiators still keep meeting. Chinese Vice Premier Wei met with Treasury Secretary Mnuchin and Trade Ambassador Lighthizer on Thursday for about 90 minutes. You would think that it would take longer than 90 minutes, but there's other meetings going on. No agreement was reached in lieu of the fact that those tariff increases were looming, and they decided to meet again Friday morning. At 12:01 Friday morning, as promised, the tariff increase went into effect. The new tariffs especially target consumer electronics, clothing, and toys. President Trump also said he received, quote, a beautiful letter from President Xi Jinping of China. The letter apparently stated the two sides need to find an agreement. Trump said China has rebuilt and is expanding its economy by stealing from our piggy bank. He says he doesn't blame the Chinese for doing it. It's the fault of previous administrations.
"But I did get last night a very beautiful letter from President Xi. Let's work together. Let's see if we can get something done. But they renegotiated the deal. I mean, they took, whether it's intellectual property theft, they took many, many parts of that deal and they renegotiated. You can't do that. And I'm different than a lot of people. I happen to think that tariffs for our country are very powerful. You know, we're the piggy bank that everybody steals from, including China. We've been paying China $500 billion a year for many, many years. China rebuilt their country because of us. They couldn't have done what they're doing. They're building a ship every 3 weeks. They're building aircraft like you've never seen, fighter jets. I respect it. I don't blame them. I blame our past leadership.
It's been a long, winding road for the last year. Yeah, just think about that. We're only a few days away from this Chinese trade war having its first anniversary. We seem to be close, but we seem to be yet so far away. It's been a long and winding road. Farmers have been watching this. Farmers have been dealing with this for the past 12 months. They're looking very carefully down the road and hoping a destination will come into view. There's also hope that when we have the G20 summit this June in Japan, that President Xi from China and President Trump from the United States will have something to have a finalized agreement to make on. So we're waiting with bated breath. It's been a long road. Hopefully the destination is coming into sight. Well, that puts a wrap on Weekend Ag Matters here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in with us. For Anna Haster here at the studios, Ken Root as well. I'm Dustin Hoffman. Have yourself a great week ahead. And I'll talk to you next week from Washington, D.C.